awake and we'll see what we can do. Okay. So the Second World War, cinema then much more important than during the First World War. You remember in the First World War, nevertheless, the first film that came back from the Somme showing all these dead bodies was very, very impressive for people. And really, the First World War remains in the popular imagination as the most horrible image possible. And the only, in the popular imagination, the only other horrible thing is the Holocaust, as you say, Prince of the Shoah. These are the two images. It's the Somme, you know, just hundreds and hundreds of people being killed by machine guns. And then the next thing is the Nazi killing machine. These are the two big images of terror and horror in the popular imagination. So, in the Second World War, cinema becomes very important. I mentioned the film Nine Men, which tells about a British patrol lost in the desert, and they all come from different social classes, but together with the British spirit, they manage to win out. This is parallel to what is happening in popular music. Many, many songs about national unity. There's a famous one, it's The Smiths and the Jones, it's a song, and the chorus is, "The Smiths and the Jones and the Kellys and Cones are on democracy's side." The Smiths and the Jones, English people. The Kellys, Irish people. The Cones, Jewish people. Yeah, so we're all united together. Now it's wartime. Yeah, between wartime, it doesn't matter, but it's wartime. We're all united together. And a lot of the films did this. There was a film called In Which We Serve, In Which We Serve, en français, c'est traduit sous le titre Ceux qui servent en mer. Which was telling you how wonderful the Navy was, la gloire de la marine. And you can imagine the kind of brave Englishmen, but and very humorous Englishmen, who appear in this kind of films. By the end of the war, you get a development of new kinds of films, in particular a lot of comedies. Many of the comedies taken from the theatre. Noel Coward is the funny playwright of the 1940s, 1950s. Fairly light comedy. It's the sort of thing you may have seen on a Saturday night, on a Sunday night on MC's, a film based on one of his comedies. They're drawing room comedies. Yeah, but everything happens in a rather luxurious salon, and they're usually quite well written, but they are not action films. They're not action films. In particular, Blithe Spirits and Brief Encounter are two examples, very popular films from 1945, based on the plays of Noel Coward, which are not generally considered to be great literature. It's funny, it's to have a laugh, and so on. And you begin to get, then, the tradition of the British comedy. This is relatively new. Now, this is relatively new in British cinema, the British comedy, and that will become a staple. And you know that even today, British comedy is relatively successful. You have all seen some British comedies. Bridget Jones, or Love Actually, or Notting Hill. Any more British comedies you like? Say again? Mr. Bean, yeah, of course, not in the also in the cinema, but originally on the television, of course, yes. And your parents probably liked television comedy from what's the name of that person who I personally hate, but there you go. Extremely famous British comedy for your parents. Benny Hill, thank you. Yeah, Benny Hill. Personally, I detest Benny Hill, but this is just because my feeling is that when I came to France, everybody said, "Oh yes, you're British, Benny Hill." I have killed several French people for this, but there you go. Okay, so the beginning of the British comedy, and this will be an important part of the British identity. Even in France, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, well, people sometimes, because I'm English, French people sometimes say to me, "Well, I really don't like the English." People do tell me that, but very often they say, "I like English humour." The humor, English humor, l'humour britannique, is an institution, very difficult to describe, very difficult to pin down, but it's part of the image of Britain, is British humor. It's not completely a myth. It's true that when you begin a meeting in Britain, or a class in Britain, you automatically begin with a joke. That's automatic. Interestingly enough, in business, this causes a lot of problems. English businessmen who come to France, the French businessmen, they don't like this. You start a meeting with a joke. You're not serious, you know. It's beginning to come in. But in business, I'm talking about really in business. I used to work in the private sector, in the big companies, Renault, Pechiney, and so on. There was a problem of communication here. And of course, the French people who went to England, oh, he's not very funny, is he? So humor, very, very important to come back to the cinema. Also, at the same time, there will be a series of films by David Lean. David Lean will be one of the big directors, one of the important directors. And in particular, he will, at this time, produce a couple of classic films based on the novels of Dickens. So, Great Expectations and Oliver Twist. Films then where the center of the story is the terrible poverty of the 19th century, but where the moral of the story is moralism. Yeah, if the poor work hard and the rich are generous, everything will be okay. Yeah, you need to remember that Charles Dickens was a conservative, not at all a radical. No. You know, Charles Dickens was a conservative. He wrote in his novels how terrible life was for poor people. But his solution was the rich should be more generous and the poor should work harder. Yeah, so it was a solution. It was absolutely not a radical. That people often get confused because when you write about all the terrible poverty, you think, oh, he must be a radical. He wasn't a radical. He wanted to tell the truth, which is a very, very important. Yeah. But his solution was within the bounds of a tradition. But to come back to it, so David Lean producing these, which are quite well known even in Britain today, you show that, see them every Christmas, you know, and so on and so forth. He will also make, much later, he will make Lawrence of Arabia, which will be a very interesting film because it's a film about the empire, but the hero is more on the side of the Egyptians than on the side of the empire. It's a slightly complicated situation where Lawrence of Arabia is a hero because he is a friend to the Egyptians. So it's a kind of, it's not an anti-colonialist film, but it's not a colonialist film. It's something a little more complicated. And so the war is finished and we are in the Golden Age. 1945, 30 million. 30 million tickets every week. Yeah, 30 million cinema tickets sold every week. 1945, yeah, the end of the war. Yeah, remember? There was a war. Yeah, war. Bang, bang. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. That's a lot of tickets. Yeah. Certainly. My parents were born in 1933. So in 1945, well, they were only 12, but in the early 50s, they would go to the cinema two or three times a week. This was the norm. But there's not much else to do, it has to be said. So, you know, the only competition was dancing or cinema. Yeah, dancing or cinema, you know. No Nintendo DS, you know. Right, and again, of course, people were worried, the permanent worry of British cinema, American domination. Yeah, this is the time when the musical comedies, the great musical comedies of Hollywood, are hitting the screens, and they are much more popular than all this. Yeah, and so, say again? Do you have a question? Oh, yeah, The Wizard of Oz is 1937, but it's still very popular. Yeah, extremely popular musical comedies. You know, the post-war ones, Oklahoma, I think, is 1940, things like that. It was a wonderful film. I love them. Yeah, big problem, American domination. How can we survive? And also another political question is the question of trade. Great Britain at the end of the war was completely broke. There was no money left. The situation was very, very terrible, not just for the people, but but also for the government. I think that they finished paying the debt 5 years ago or something. The debt was huge. The war debt was massive. In particular, then in 1945, 1946, 1947, Britain did not have enough dollars to buy different things she needed. And people were worried. They said, well, should we buy American films? There are more important uses for the dollar. Yeah, and so some people were saying, no, we shouldn't buy American films because we need the dollars to buy something else. And this was a big debate in the newspapers, and they called it the debate, Bogarts or Bacon. Yeah. Est-ce qu'on achète du jambon ou est-ce qu'on achète les films de Humphrey Bogart? Yeah, Bogart or Bacon, the big debate. Yeah. This is the question. So it became a political question about trade. And the result of this debate was heavy taxes on American film. And so a compromise, but they made the heavy taxes on American films, and the American companies who made films were very angry. They were very angry, yeah. Taxes, protectionism, yeah. This was also the time when one of the great characters of British cinema began to become famous, Laurence Olivier. Laurence Olivier, a great actor, and also director, and most famously in 48 Hamlet, 1948 Hamlet, 1948, which even today remains a classic version of Hamlet. He did some new things. I don't know if you remember the Shakespeare plays, but you probably remember one or two. And very often, the characters talk alone. They have monologues. And Laurence Olivier was the first person on a film to have the monologue off. So you have the, on screen, you have the man thinking and not moving his lips. And off screen, you have the voice, yeah? So he used this, a voice off. The voice off, on voix off, comme on dit. He followed up in 1955, also with an absolutely classic version of Richard III. Yeah. Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by the son of York. The other great director from this period is Carol Reed. Attention, il s'agit de Monsieur Carol Reed. Il s'appelle Carol, mais c'est un garçon. Which is an important point because at this time it was almost impossible for a woman to make it in the film industry. The women directors will be in the 80s, 90s, and today there are a whole number, but it was still extremely. I don't know of any women directors of this time. I know there were some, but not famous. They didn't get famous. What did he produce? 1947, Odman Out. Cherchez l'intrus, on dirait en français. And these are films which are obviously more sophisticated than the pre-war films. So, for example, the hero is not completely good, and the baddie is not completely bad. You have a little bit of psychological sophistication. He also made The Third Man, Le Troisième Homme, The Third Man, a couple of years later, which is a film about Vienna under Nazi occupation, and he takes on the question of denunciation. C'est la question de la délation qui est beaucoup plus centrale à la culture politique en France. Donc ça pose beaucoup plus débat en France, l'idée de la délation en général. For example, on English television, when there is a television program and the police say, please call us on this number if you saw anything, nobody is shocked. Whereas in France, this is a cause for a debate. Yeah, this is a cause for a debate. It's controversial. And it's not. This is partly because, of course, England was not occupied during the war. And so this question was not so hot. Yeah, but interesting difference in political culture there. So those are a couple of great directors, and the other thing which will happen at this time, and we're going to see this in a couple of weeks' time when we hit it on the thematic turn, and this is the studios. The great English studios are Ealing Studios, which is the Hollywood of England, except, of course, yes, sure, come and sit down, welcome, which is, of course, the Hollywood of Britain, but, of course, when I say the Hollywood of Britain, it is much, 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 much smaller. It is the mini Hollywood, the mini Hollywood of Britain, Ealing Studios, and they will produce fantastical films. They will produce fantastical films, they will produce westerns, but most of all, Ealing will be famous for the Ealing comedies. And that is interesting, because if you go to the, I'm not suggesting you need to, but if you go to the Fnac in Paris, you will find 10 or 12 Ealing comedies on DVD. Now, I don't mean to say they're very popular today, but nevertheless, films from Britain in 1953 on DVD in the shops in Paris, it still got a certain presence. Yeah, it had a success which lasted 50 years later. People are still watching them. The most famous ones, one we will see in a couple of weeks' time, Passport to Pimlico. I don't want to give you too many details because I'm going to ask some questions about it when I show you the film. Passport to Pimlico. The Man in the White Suit. Goes the Day Well. Goes the Day Well is about an imaginary Nazi invasion of Britain. And so it's written, the film is written in the 1950s, and they imagine, let's imagine that the Nazis did invade Britain. And I don't know if you remember your history here. Because Germany lost the war, we often have the impression that, of course, Germany was going to lose the war. It was very close. It was very, very close in 1941. Probably half of the British thought they were going to lose the war and be occupied by Germany. It was extremely close. And this is the imaginary film about the Nazis invading Britain. And I'm not going to give you too many details about this, but let's say what will be very interesting about it is, what kind of person is the hero? Yeah, who is the hero of these things? We'll look at this question, yeah? But that's what's interesting about the image of England that it shows. It shows the image of the English hero. What are the characteristics of the English hero? And very often they are not the same characteristics as those of the American hero. And it's not seen in quite the same way. Just one more to give you an idea, because this one has been remade recently. I don't know if any of you have seen The Lady Killers. A recent, in my opinion, very good American remake of the Ealing comedy, The Lady Killers, which is with, I can't remember who played it, but very, 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 very interesting piece. And finally, in the Ealing comedies, Kind Hearts and Coronets. Kind Hearts and Coronets. And in this story, it's the story of an aristocrat who wants to inherit the money and the wealth of the family, and so he kills 8 members of his family. Yeah, it's a comedy. Funny, huh? And what's particularly funny about it is that Alec Guinness is the actor who plays all 8 members of the family, men and women. Okay, and it is a little bit exercice de style de comédie, that Alec Guinness plays incredibly the 8 characters who are murdered in this, including the men and the women, which is very, 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 very funny film. Now, the Ealing Studios last for 25 years, and they produce a lot of what are considered classic comedies, classic Ealing comedies. And some people say that when you look at modern British comedies like A Fish Named Wanda or Four Weddings and a Funeral, many people say you still have some of the Ealing style in there. Now, it's a question of debate, huh? But some people think that. Where does that bring us to? That brings us to the 1950s. 1950s, it was a good time. It was a good time. Remember that I think it's in 1958, Macmillan goes to the election, and his slogan for the election campaign is, "You've never had it so good." Yeah? Vous n'avez jamais vécu aussi bien. Now, can you imagine today, say in France, a presidential election, and one of the candidates has as their slogan, "Votez pour moi, vous n'avez jamais vécu aussi bien." Yeah, it's not probable as a slogan, is it? Yeah. Okay. And this was the slogan, and it's interesting because my mother says he was right. He said that really, that the 50s was a time when suddenly people's standard of living was getting much better. Also, people were still extremely happy and amazed that the hospitals were free and things like this. The prosperity after the war, a certain euphoria, really, a certain euphoria when it became clear slowly that there wasn't going to be immediately another war. For a short while, people believed there would be a war with Russia immediately. Yeah? But when it seemed that there wasn't going to be, then a certain euphoria the building of millions of houses, millions of houses for social housing, very, very important. Good quality housing. People in the 1950s, ordinary people had toilets inside their houses. Yeah? This was quite impressive. My grandmother never had a toilet inside a house, but my mother always had. Yeah, so it was really something really very impressive there. Washing machines, rock and roll. Washing machines and rock and roll are really two very important changes in life. Of course, washing machines are not very exciting, but if you don't have one, then you realise that they are actually quite important. However. Television is also arriving, and this causes a new problem for cinema. Because television is, one, free, not free actually, but it's much cheaper than going to the cinema every day. It's at home, and so that's going to be a major problem for the cinema. And in fact, the number of tickets sold every week in 1949, you still have 27.5 million tickets every week, and by 1960, you have 10 million. Okay, so you can see in the 10 years, at the end of the 50s, the cinema has really declined a lot from the point of view of the number of tickets sold. And people are very worried. In fact, a lot of people think the cinema will just disappear. Now, we know today that, in fact, the cinema didn't disappear. But people were expecting, there's the television now. Why would people want the cinema? Huh? And especially because at the time, cinema was not respected as it is today. Today we talk about, in French, we talk about le septième art. It's considered that it's reasonable to write serious books about the cinema. The elite takes the cinema seriously. But at the time, the cinema was really something for the people to go see now. It's not real culture. It was not considered to be real culture. So that was the situation. In this situation, the British film directors tried to produce some films which could survive. And the first type of film, of course, is the war film. In the 1950s, a whole series, 1949, on a whole series of films about the Second World War. Very interesting. Some of them still popular today. Naturally, of course, films about war are not history. Yeah, films about war are image and myth, they're not history. And you will be amazed that when you watch the war film from the 1950s, there is almost no violence. Yeah? This is not the truth about the war. It was very violent. Okay, that's interesting. It's interesting that people do not want to see that. The people who have been to war didn't want to see it on the screen. And it's much later, you remember Steven Spielberg, the Evil Sophie Le Soldat Iron, extremely violent. And the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War produced films which are extremely violent. But perhaps that's just because the people who watched them mostly had not been to war. I don't know, that's just an idea. So what kind of films do you have? Well, in the British war film, the history of the war is very simple. The Russians do nothing. Ici, vous connaissez un peu l'histoire de la Deuxième Guerre mondiale. C'est pas très juste. Si on met dans les films que les Russes n'ont rien fait, c'est pas 20 millions de morts ou quelque chose. The French Resistance. What did the French Resistance do in the British war film? Nothing. Nothing at all. No importance whatsoever. What did the Americans do in the British war film? Nothing. Nothing. It's just the British, again, that's the advantage of writing films is you can write your own story. really, films, from the point of view of history, films are even worse than school books. You know how school books in different countries tell a different story? Well, films is even worse. And so you have all these wonderful films about how intelligent the British are and how wonderful they are. Again, for example, The Colditz Story is a film about escaping from a prison camp. And The Dam Busters, very famous film, Blizzard of Babaj, The Dam Busters. And these two are typical because the hero is British, of course. And he is successful because he is cleverer than everybody else. In these films, the heroes do not have more guns or more ferocious fighters. They're just cleverer. So in The Dam Busters, the hero is a very, very quiet looking man, very timid looking man, who invents a new kind of bomb. Okay? So it's British genius, if you like. Which of course does not reflect the reality, because all the important technological advances in the Second World War were made in America. Because in America they had the money and the scientists, and they weren't being bombed every morning, you know? Let's have a look at the British story. And the British story, the British are so intelligent that they will win. Other example, which I just saw last week, actually, Bridge Over the River Kwai. The Fortune of the River Kwai. Bridge Over the River Kwai. Very, very interesting film, because much more sophisticated than these. Because this will show, that's right, you have the tune, I see, this will show British prisoners of war on the Japanese fronts, and it will all be about the values. What values do you defend? The values of discipline, the values of work, the values, the Japanese soldiers have the value of honor, and the Japanese soldiers do not have any respect for the British soldiers, because the British soldiers surrendered. Yeah, they were in a difficult situation, they surrendered, they became prisoners, and the Japanese soldiers said, you're not soldiers. Soldiers don't surrender, soldiers kill themselves. That's the normal thing to do. So it's a whole debate about what kind of values are possible. And it's very complex film, and the hero, I won't give you the ending, but the hero has a big conflict of different values in his head. And very interestingly also, is that the presentation of the Japanese is not racist. And this is the exception, because many, many war films have a rather racist view of the Japanese, yeah? And this is relatively sophisticated at the time, or otherwise it's just I didn't understand it well enough. It's still, of course, a patriotic film. The British are extremely determined people, and very humorous, very intelligent. Not like British people at all, really. But there you go, that's cinema for you. Which brings us up to page 13, which is for next week, because that's all I'm going to say today about the history. You get a little episode each week.